Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is a special edition of On Point, broadcasting across the United States.
And across the UK on BBC Radio 5 Live, I'm Nihal Arthanayake.
Well, the BBC asked if we'd like to link our audiences today, American and British, to talk about President Trump's state visit to the UK. And we said, but of course. So this hour on Point, we'll be talking about that visit, about the relationship between the US and the UK, which, with so much change afoot, Prime Minister Theresa May steps down as Conservative leader on Friday. Britain is trying to figure out how to leave the EU, and the US prepares for the 2020 presidential election. So we're opening our BBC and NPR phone lines to listeners in the US and the UK simultaneously.
So excited. We want to hear from you, listeners on both sides of the Atlantic. British listeners, what do you want American listeners to know about the race to replace Theresa May? How do the 2020 presidential elections look to you? And if you're in the UK, call us on 08085 909693 or send me a text on 85058.
And American listeners, what do you want to tell BBC listeners looking on from abroad? What do you want to ask about how the US-UK relationship looks like from here? And so if you're in the US, we're at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. You can also tweet us at On Point Radio or leave a comment on our website or on Facebook as well. We're at On Point Radio.
And as ever, Five Live listeners, you can tweet us via BBC Five Live. President Trump, of course, arrived in the UK yesterday before Air Force One had even touched down at Stansted Airport. There he was with those itchy Twitter fingers, and he was already firing insults at London Mayor Sadiq Khan, the stone-cold loser, he described him. He was also reported to have called the Duchess of Sussex, formerly Meghan Markle, nasty, something which he, of course, denies. Alongside Prime Minister Theresa May at a joint press conference earlier, the first question to leaders came from British Sky News presenter Beth Rigby. He repeated his criticisms of London Mayor Sadiq Khan.
Well, I think he's been a not very good mayor, from what I understand. He's done a poor job. Crime is up, a lot of problems. And I don't think he should be criticizing a representative of the United States that can do so much good for the United Kingdom.
As for the current but outgoing Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Theresa May, who is stepped down as leader of the Conservative Party on Friday, triggering that contest to select a new PM, May reaffirmed the relationship between the U.S. and the U.K., pushing back against British leaders who have spoken out against Trump's visit.
And I would say to both the Mayor of London and to Jeremy Corbyn, the discussions that we have had today are about the future of this most important relationship between the US and the UK. As the President described it, the greatest alliance the world has seen.
That's the current British Prime Minister, Theresa May, again, stepping down as Conservative Party leader on Friday. So, Nihal, I mean, this press conference, how does it look like from there with the President and the outgoing PM standing side by side? Were they presenting a joint front in the eyes of the British public?
Well, she called him, Meghna, Donald on two occasions.
I've always been honest with you, Donald, she said.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. She did. And then she called him Donald again in a less perhaps schoolteachery way. And that was quite interesting. And then she went back to Mr. President. So she went really informal, because I don't often hear him being called Donald. I don't know how it plays out in America. Does Mike Pence regard him as Donald, or does he always say Mr. President? That seems to be the protocol, isn't it, Meghna?
Yes, it is. I don't think I've ever heard a politician at least politely refer to the president by his first name.
Yeah, it tends to be the Donald, doesn't it, if people are trying to wind him up. Apparently he doesn't like that very much. It was quite interesting because the special relationship is talked about a lot, And we're constantly fed these two words, special relationship. But I wonder, Meghna, from your American listeners, what they think the special relationship is. I mean, what do you define the special relationship as?
What do I define it as? Oh, yeah. Well, okay, first of all, I just want to say again, for American listeners who want to answer that question, we're at 800-423-8255 here in the U.S. I mean, the special relationship, of course, has a deep historical foundation to it, especially following the Second World War. And of course, you know, here we are simultaneously observing the 75th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. So the common philosophical, political, historical bonds that tie the two nations together are indeed special. But I think there's a diversity of opinion on how special it is for the UK in this day and age and how necessary it is for the United States, especially given our current president's, you know, views on foreign policy. So, I mean, what's your take on it, Nihal?
Well, what people are aware of Jeremy Corbyn, particularly in America, that does not wish to patronize anyone. He's the leader of Her Majesty's opposition. And you would have heard in the press conference, Donald Trump describe the leader of Her Majesty's opposition as a negative force. Is he well known in America, Meghna?
Jeremy Corbyn? I suppose amongst certain corners of the highly sort of globally aware
political watchers.
The wonks, as we affectionately call them.
Right, okay.
But do you have people over there? Let's talk
to
people. Okay, great.
I do. And please get in contact with us. 85058. That is the text number here in the UK if you want to reach out to us. We are having a transatlantic phone-in, and we've done this before with NPR, and it's always really enjoyable, or in the words of President Trump, it's phenomenal, it's tremendous. Okay, Claire Bentley-Smith is with us, who's an artist based in Leeds. We also have Jed with us as well. Jed Allen is a student in Manchester. Good afternoon to both of you.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Claire, I'll start with you. You're an artist from the artistic community, and you're a Trump supporter, is that right?
I wouldn't say I'm a Trump supporter necessarily as him, you know, towards him as an individual person, but as the office of the President of the US, you know, I think that we should always have open arms for an ally that has had our back throughout many historical times, you know. And I feel strongly sort of joined with the American people at the moment, because I think that the vote for Brexit and the vote for Trump are one and the same thing.
Which is what?
I think it has been blue-collar, working-class, patriotic communities voting for their own prosperity and peace in their land.
Okay. American listeners, how do you see that as a British listener, saying that that's why people voted for Trump? Claire Bentley-Smith there gave those reasons. Jed, you're not so keen. Oh, go on.
I just was wondering if I might ask Claire a question.
Of course.
Claire, does that mean that you disagree with London Mayor Sadiq Khan's assertion that the current president of the United States doesn't represent British or American values?
I strongly disagree with Sadiq Khan. You know, he's a very divisive figure over here in the UK. And I think that the Brexit voting public, you would probably find closely aligned to the Trump voting public in America, which is middle England, middle America, who are saying that they're not so enamoured of the liberal narrative that has had control of both our nations for so long. And that, you know, we want to focus on protecting our own people.
Jed, not such a fan of this visit. Why not?
Well, I think I would agree that, like, the same kind of forces that are driving Donald Trump are also driving Brexit. But I think in both cases, what they do is kind of offer simple, easy solutions to kind of much more complex, like, problems which are going on in, like, the kind of terms of the globalized world and the rise of, like, automation stuff, which is going to put so many of these kind of blue-collar workers probably out of work in the next few decades going forward. And I think it's very easy to say, if we just leave the European Union, all of these big problems that people are worried about are going to go away if we just build this massive wall along the border, all of these immigrants, these are kind of causes of your problems. But actually, I think it's quite easy to kind of point and say these are the scapegoats. And it's quite a common tactic we've seen all the way throughout history, where you kind of point to one other group of people and say this is the source of all your problems, when in fact it's something much wider and something much deeper, which I think neither the Brexit or Donald Trump really has the answers to.
Well, Jed and Claire, thank you so much. And from Leeds and Manchester, so representing Northern England there, let's go actually to the west coast of the United States. Let's go to Tony, who's calling from Berkeley, California. Tony, you're on the air with NPR and the BBC.
Yes, to the people of England, I disagree with the mayor of London. And Donald Trump, he does represent what the United States stands for. If nobody, he wouldn't have been elected president. And everyone listening, they need to scratch below the surface, whether you're in the United States or England, scratch below the tip of the iceberg. You know, I mean, Donald Trump has plenty of support in California. Now, you might not hear about it because of the way the media is very biased, but he had, Donald Trump received 4.5 million votes in the state of California. So I'm a supporter of the president. He does have supporters. What's going on in, with Theresa May? I mean, obviously that doesn't have anything to do with Trump's doing. I mean, it isn't Trump's fault that she's resigning on Friday. Obviously it's, you know, internal amongst, I guess, Parliament or whatever.
Yeah.
But people need to scratch below the surface here. He's not the devil everyone makes him out to be. He's just a tough cookie. And, I think people need to take it for what it's worth.
Tony,
I guess people can't handle it.
Yeah, Tony, yes. Tony, I hear you. And thank you so much for that call from Berkeley, California. Tony saying that Donald Trump received 4.5 million votes in California, a substantial number. But just as some context, there are 20 million registered voters just in that one state alone here. Okay, I'm going to sneak in one more call before we have to take a break. Elaine's calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Elaine, you've just got a couple of seconds before we've got to take a break, so go ahead.
Yes. First of all, I worked in London in 1968 and loved it, and I thought that England was much more progressive than America at that time. Second, Trump does not represent the majority of Americans. It's because of the Electoral College that he got elected. And the moment people realized he was going to be our president, they sort of charged into action, and we've been organizing ever since.
Well, Elaine, thank you so much, and forgive me for interrupting you, but we do have to take a break on our end in this really special simulcast with the BBC. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
And this is Nihal Arthur Naika on BBC Radio 5 Live.
We are talking this hour about President Donald Trump, Prime Minister Theresa May, Brexit in the UK, the 2020 election here in the United States, in a special simulcast, as you're hearing, with On Point and the BBC's Radio 5 Live, with American and British audiences together.
So here we are. This is your choice, your chance to speak directly to American listeners. So, how do President Trump's relationships with world leaders look to you? Is he a man that we can trust to do a phenomenal, a tremendous trade deal with? After all, we keep hearing about this. We haven't seen any of the detail yet. And as we know, the devil is most certainly in the detail. How has the Trump presidency changed how you think of the world's most powerful nation? Enhanced it or demeaned it.
And I just want to play another moment. Speaking of great deals or future deals between the United States and the United Kingdom, another moment from today's press conference with the two leaders. The president of the United States was asked about whether or not in a future trade deal with the U.S., that the United Kingdom's National Health Service, whether that would be on the table. The prime minister had to clarify the reporter's question to the president. And here's what the president then eventually said.
I can't hear him.
It's the National Health Service. He says, should the National Health Service be on the table?
Look, I think everything with the trade deal is on the table. When you're dealing in trade, everything's on the table. So NHS or anything else, or a lot more than that. But everything will be on the table, absolutely.
So, Nihal, how is that going over in the UK?
I think it would be almost political suicide for any British MP to try and win a mandate on a platform of saying that parts of the NHS should be sold off. And that is why you heard Prime Minister May push back almost immediately after President Trump talked about NHS being on the table when it comes to a trade deal. She added a caveat within nanoseconds of him saying that, because she knows politically that does not play out well to the British electorate, regardless of your political affiliations. There is a deep-rooted love and respect for the institution that is the NHS and what it stands for. And I'd be very interested to hear from American listeners, your wonderful American listeners, to their views on the NHS, the National Health Service, free at the point of delivery, and what they think about that, because we know that there are very different opinions about the NHS and what it stands for in America. And I'd very much like to hear some of those. And let me take an attempt at doing your numbers now. 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. There you go, if you
very
want to get
well
in contact.
Done.
With American Radio. We've just had a new tweet, in fact, from our health secretary over here in the UK. His name is Matt Hancock. And he has said, dear Mr. President, he's now addressing the president directly, the NHS isn't on the table in trade talks and never will be, not on my watch. Well, considering all the machinations currently going on with the Conservative government in the UK, who knows how long his watch will last for, but certainly not on his watch. Right, we've got a couple of callers on this side of the Atlantic. Meghna, I'm sure you have callers coming through to you on your side of the Atlantic. Let's start with Anthony, and then we also have Andrew as well. Andrew is in Oxfordshire, and Anthony is in Kent, both in the south part of the UK. Anthony, I'll start with you. Good afternoon.
Hi there.
You are a fan of President Trump. Why?
I'm a very big fan of President Trump. He's one of the few leaders around the world that sticks up for his country, America. He puts America first. He sticks up for the American people, and he's doing everything for America. Unlike some leaders, you know, a lot of leaders around the world don't do that. And, you know, you've got to admire somebody that puts America first and always has. He probably always will be. That's his character.
So does that mean then he will probably be a terrible person to do a trade deal with, because we won't get equitable status and we won't get back what we're giving, because as you've pointed out, he puts America first?
Well, of course he does, and you can't expect him to do anything else. Whether he'll do a good trade deal for America, and it's up for our side of the Atlantic to put a good trade deal for us. That's common sense, really. Every leader will do a good deal for their own country. And it's up for our leaders, which I don't have much faith in, to be honest. They've messed Brexit up. Everything they touch is not going well. So, you know, we sadly got very weak leadership in this country. Sadly to say that, you know.
Mm. Okay, Andrew is with us. Andrew, you don't agree with what you've heard Anthony just say, do you?
Well, not particularly. Hi, Nihal.
Hi,
I texted you a few times, but it came up Nigel a couple of times.
It's either Nigel, Andrew. See, my name, and Meghna will know this as well. Predictive text is very Eurocentric.
I know.
So when
it's
you put Nihal in,
I'm so sorry.
It's usually inhale, not Nihal. So I'm glad Meghna will know this. We'll find out what Meghna's version of this is on predictive text in a moment. But yes, you are speaking to Nigel or inhale on Five Love. Andrew, tell us about the president of Trump.
Well, it's more what I called about early on was because Trump has his attack on the natural world from my standpoint, there's a lot of other things I could complain about Donald Trump, but the main thing I called about was that he single-handedly, in the last several months, has dismantled much of the protected lands in the U.S. in Bear's Ears in Utah, drilling for uranium, or maybe near the Grand Canyon. He's single-handedly dismantled like 2 million acres of what has been previously deemed public lands, and it's all about minerals and mineral extraction and natural gas and all of this. And what I think the reason I phoned was is because that resonates with the Friday school demonstrations about climate change. It just kind of resonates.
Greta Thunberg, yeah,
right?
The one that she initiated.
Yeah,
so he's killing. I mean, I'm in the tourism industry. We take people to these places in the U.S. Yeah. These sacred sites, and he literally, in front of our eyes, this year has dismantled 2 million acres of those lands that we used to take people to show them how well conservation efforts were working.
Yeah, well, Andrew, I'm actually going to turn to some callers here in the United States. So, Nigel, inhale, Nihal, if that's okay. Ah. By the way, predictive text tends to...
I didn't inhale, though.
Predictive text tends to turn my name into Megan, so not that exciting, not as creative.
Okay. Okay.
But let's
Miss Markle.
Let's actually go to the home of the American Revolution right here in Boston, Massachusetts, awesome. Where Dan is calling. Dan, go ahead.
Hi, guys. I wanted to touch upon the relationship between the U.S. and Britain. And, you know, obviously being in Boston, we're surrounded by our historical ties. We see it everywhere we go. And, you know, I think that those ties are much stronger than, you know, one president or one prime minister. And you know, I think that, you know, I'm certainly not a fan of Donald Trump whatsoever. I think he does not.
Why not, Dan?
What?
Why not?
Because he doesn't embody what both of our countries have stood for so long, as far as respect and as far as tradition. A lot of people like the fact that he's quote unquote shaking things up, but he's doing it in such a crass and crude way that there isn't really much chance that we're going to be able to come back and ever be the same in the light of the world, in the eyes of the world, rather.
But Dan, things were said, Dan, when George W. Bush and Tony Blair went to war in Iraq. Similar
sure.
things were said then. But also as well, Dan, doesn't he speak a language, as was pointed out one of my previous callers, that he stands for America first, and that's what Americans want to hear? After all, it's for 20 years, for a generation, Americans have seen wage stagnation.
I think there are some Americans that quote unquote speak that language. The thing is, though, is that most of those people aren't willing to change with a global picture, with a global change that's going on with the environment.
Dan,
but
those people are your fellow Americans, though, and certainly
they are.
You've got to think that the United States as a whole, regardless of who sits in the White House, is going to recover mm-hmm. from any ups and downs in terms of its view, how other nations see us.
We will recover, but it won't be the same. And the thing is that when you take one smaller group in a very large country and you make them the singular voice and you say, okay, these people are what is representative of an extremely, probably the most diverse country on the face of the planet in history. I think that's dangerous. Mm. I think when you're not willing to listen to the vast majority of people and you...
Dan, looks like that line is gone.
Wow.
But let's go to actually Conklin, New York, where Carrie is calling. Carrie, go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Hi, Carrie.
I guess what I really want to say is I apologize for President Trump's approach. I apologize to the British people for any nasty things that he said. I feel like our executive, whatever, should not be using Twitter as this attacking folks, using nasty language, just making announcements about things. It's very frustrating to me because, I mean, we have a longstanding relationship of good ties with the UK, with the British people. And yes, we need to take care of America. That's very true. But we also have to work together as a global community, because calling names to one at one another is juvenile, and it's not helpful. Not helpful
okay,
at all.
Carrie, can I just introduce you to Tony, who's called in from North Wales, a lovely part of the UK, if you ever get a chance to visit here, Carrie. Tony, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Nihal, how are you?
I'm very well, sir. Carrie has apologised to you, essentially, as someone who lives in the UK, about the way Trump does things. Carrie, meet Tony. Tony, meet Carrie.
Hi, Tony.
Carrie. So nice very to kind of you to apologise.
Well, I feel like really I need to.
And I don't think there's any real need. While your President Trump is not that palatable to many of us in the UK, I'm not a Trump supporter by any stretch of the imagination, but I have some respect for a political leader who has the courage of their own convictions to say what they think and then take action on it. I'm fed up with British politicians. You may or may not be aware they've been pouring scorn on the outgoing Prime Minister Theresa May while coming up with no viable alternatives or plans of their own. They've just been putting her down, and we're losing somebody with integrity and honesty.
But Tony, are you talking about her fellow Conservative Party members, or the Labour Party, or all of the above?
Pretty much all of the above. It's been a disingenuous conversation right from the very beginning. You know, we shouldn't be where we are now, but we are, and there just seemed to be this. This sudden furore for getting rid of her and pinning all of the labels of failure on her, when in fact there's no credible alternative come up from anybody in this country.
Tony, sorry to interrupt you, Tony, but I want to bring Carrie back in here, because Tony has said that he admires at least someone who stands by his convictions, however unpopular they may be. Can you find in your heart and soul, Carrie, any even grudging respect for a man who does what he says? Now, he may not get it through, and in fact, he's got very little of his campaign pledges through, but that he stands by them.
Well, I mean, I think it's wonderful if you have, you know, convictions and you stand by them, whether or not they are convictions that really make sense to bring a nation together and to bring a world together. I mean, the only thing I can think of that I have ever agreed with him on is getting Special Olympics funding back. Other than that, I just feel like he's so divisive.
One thing, Carrie.
But Carrie, let me ask you a question, though. I mean, obviously, we hear a lot from both the supporters and critics of the president on this show. But, I mean, he's not unique on the world stage anymore in terms of saying, forceful, outrageous things. I mean, the Conservative Party may be on the brink of electing Boris Johnson as the next head of the Conservative Party and the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom.
I know. But see, again, I just go back to this, you know, why are we calling people names? And why not just do the job without all of the insults? I don't, you know, if it's Trump.
But Carrie,
or if it's
don't we do that in real life? Carrie, isn't part of his attraction is that he acts, perhaps not in a presidential sense traditionally, but he acts like so many of us do when we'll say someone's a stone cold loser. Okay, he says that as opposed to hiding behind diplomatic protocol.
Nihal, do you do that every day? Do you walk around calling people, like tweeting out names to people every day?
You've obviously never seen my timeline, Meghna. You need to go on there. It's a war zone up there on Twitter, trust me.
Full disclosure, I have not.
Just wait until you do. In fact, I've been reprimanded for calling people stone cold losers on many occasions on social media. But Carrie, don't you mean that's the realness, right?
Well,
I personally do not go around calling people stone cold losers. I if I don't agree with someone, I can say, you know what? I don't agree with that. I think that is not a true statement, or that's not something that I agree with. But I don't call people names. I mean, it's pointless. We teach our children in school not to bully. We teach our children in school not to use language and name calling. That's not appropriate. It does not get the point across. Diplomatic responsibility is to respectfully comment and talk with people, not call names.
Well,
it's
Carrie,
not okay.
We've got to take a break here on our end. So, Carrie, thank you. And Tony, thank you as well. So, BBC listeners, keep calling in. What are your questions for your American counterparts here? And U.S. listeners, what is your message for the U.K., for the rest of the world? This is On Point in the U.S. and the BBC's Radio 5 Live's Nihal Arthanayake in the U.K. We'll be right back.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
And live from the UK, this is Nihal Arthanayake on BBC Radio 5 Live.
We've opened up the phones on both sides of the Atlantic to hear you, American and British listeners, to talk about President Trump's state visit to the United Kingdom and, of course, that US-UK special relationship as well.
And we want to hear about that. Do you see a common thread between Brexit and today's partisan politics in the United States? What is your solution for bridging the divide that exists in both of our nations? It has to be said, we've got to be real with each other. And have the Trump administration's trade policies changed your view of the US? So whether you be in the UK or in the US, get in contact with us.
By the way, earlier in the show, Nihal said he wanted to hear from U.S. listeners about what they think of the National Health Service in the U.K. So call folks, 800-423-8255. You can also tweet us at On Point Radio. Now, Nihal, I actually just want to play a little bit more sound from today, other aspects of the president's state visit to the United Kingdom. We were talking about, does the U.S. know who Jeremy Corbyn is? Well, the leader of the Labour Party spoke earlier at a rally in opposition to the president's visit. Jeremy Corbyn denied reports that he'd refused to meet Mr. Trump, but he criticized the president's comments about London Mayor Sadiq Khan.
I am not, absolutely not, refusing to meet anybody. I want to be able to have that dialogue to bring about the better and more peaceful world that we all want to live in. But I'm very disappointed, particularly today on the wonderful festival of Eid, that our Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, has been attacked in the way that he has. I'm proud that our city has a Muslim mayor.
That's the leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, today. Now, switching gears here a little bit, because one of the overarching concerns continuing to paralyze British government, if that's fair to say, Nihal, is, of course, the question of Brexit. And during this morning's press conference...
We've heard nothing else, Meghna, for 3 years.
Well, the Prime Minister reiterated that she believes it's in the best interests of the UK to leave the European Union with a deal, one that she's failed 3 times to get through Parliament, but that it will be up to her successor to take the issue forward, and she believes a good deal is on the table. So here's what she said.
What is paramount, I believe, is delivering on Brexit for the British people. And I seem to remember the President suggested that I sued the European Union, which we didn't do. We went into negotiations and we came out with a good deal.
Yeah. That's not such a... I would have sued, but that's okay. I would have sued and settled, maybe, but you never know. She's probably a better negotiator than I am.
That's the President and the Prime Minister today. And Nihal, we actually have a caller in the United States who wants to ask your listeners about this very issue. So John's calling from West Haven, Connecticut. John, what's your question about Brexit?
Hi. My question is, from basically everything that I've seen, it seems like the majority of the British people don't want Brexit to happen. So what's being done to just cancel it? It seems like a dumb idea that it seems like people thought it was a good idea and they put that foot forward, and then it seemed like it wasn't such a good idea, so kind of time to back up and stop now.
So Nihal, can I ask you and your listeners a question to follow up on what John said? Because I saw the original referendum sheet, voting ballot, whatever you call it there,
yes.
And it literally just said leave or remain.
It was binary.
That was it.
Absolutely.
But now, 3 years later, and after unending machinations through Parliament, maybe do the British people have a better sense of what leave might mean? And has, as John's asking, has that meaningfully changed how a referendum, if it were to be held again, has it changed how that referendum might pass or not pass?
Well, rather than put this to me, and I'm not deflecting in any way, shape or form, Meghna, I'd like to hear one John in West Haven, Connecticut, speak to a Johnny in Glasgow in Scotland. Johnny in Glasgow, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Now, I know you wanted to get in contact with us primarily about Donald Trump, but I'd like you to meet John in West Haven, Connecticut. Because
hello, John, good afternoon, John.
Hi, the John meet Johnny. Johnny meet John. Because, Johnny, you probably heard John ask a question about how the British now feel about Brexit. Now, of course, Scotland voted to remain, didn't it?
Overwhelmingly, right? Is it fair to ask a Scotsman about this?
Well, I mean, you know, but let's put one caller to another. Johnny, what would your answer be to John's question?
Perhaps slightly difficult for me. I actually voted to leave the European Union. And possibly took a slightly more binary view on that, if I'm being completely honest. One of the few Scots that would probably admit that in an open forum as well. However, I think the problem that we've had, if I'm being completely honest, is the majority of politicians who are in the position to influence how, when, and in what manner we leave the European Union don't want to. So I think they're having to battle with their own conscience to try and push something through that they don't actually want. And I think that has been the major stumbling block in getting things moving forward, if I'm honest.
Mm. John, in West Haven, does that answer your question?
Well, it seems like if their heart isn't in it and they don't think that it's the right thing for the UK, then why are they doing it? Why don't they just cancel it? Why don't they just say, well, this was dumb, let's stop?
Well, Johnny, what do you think of that?
I was just going to say...
It's a due democratic process was followed. A vote was had. A question within that vote was asked. And the answer was a clear request to leave the European Union, albeit it was quite a close vote. So I think purely from a political and a democratic standpoint, the politicians are elected to carry out the wishes of the electorate. And for them not to do that would be really quite awful, to be perfectly honest with you.
I mean, the thing is, John, in West Haven, as Johnny has just pointed out, and a number of politicians have pointed out, is that if you put this, what is described beforehand as a once-in-a-lifetime or once-in-a-generation vote to the British people, and then Parliament undermines the result of that vote, then it could have long-lasting negative ramifications for people's faith in democracy, John.
Yeah, I get that. So what about the second referendum? Because as I understand, the opinion of the people has drastically changed since then.
What sport? John, what's your favourite sport?
My favourite sport, fencing.
Fencing? Oh, my God. You had to pick such an obscure sport. I love fencing because my kids used to fence. It's a great sport. But the interesting thing and the comparison people make with the referendum is you can't keep getting a vote until you get the result you want.
Correct.
And that is with a fencing match. If you lost, I don't know if you do épée, I don't know if you do saber, I don't know if you do foil. But either way, if you don't win the first time and it's just one time only, you don't go to the umpire and say, can we do this again until I win?
But, you know, Nihal, look, it's not a perfect analogy because in my mind, the better analogy is if you're fencing and on the other side is the specter of a competitor rather than an actual competitor, you're just trying to score points against a ghost, meaning that the Brexit initial vote was purely philosophical. It wasn't an actual practical policy vote on what the outcomes of removing the United Kingdom from the European Union would be.
Megan, you and I are not here to have this over Brexit, but Johnny, you come back on what Megan has just said.
I do see the point. However, I would argue that as we've seen the complexities of Brexit happening at all and the things that have to be considered, all that information that would have to be considered couldn't go on a simple ballot. Mm-hmm. It just wouldn't work at all. The queues for the polling stations would be completely around the block with people trying to just understand what they're being asked rather than simplifying the question, what do you want, and thereafter working out the details. It's not perfect. I absolutely grant that. Mm. Speaking as a devastated Tottenham supporter, I would like nothing more than results to be replayed to get the one that you want, but that's not the world that we live in, particularly when it comes to politics.
Yeah.
Well, Johnny in Glasgow, thank you.
Yeah, and John in West Haven, Connecticut, thank you. And Nihal, I will resist the urge to parry and repost with you. Even more.
You know your fencing terminology. On guard, Meghna Chakrabarti.
We've got a lot of Johns calling today, so let's take another one from Windham, New Hampshire. John, you're on the air with On Point and the BBC and BBC's Five Live.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The defining issue of our time is addressing human climate change. The science is clear, and the good test of leadership is how to respond to it. It seems like Congress is thinking about it. There's an Energy Innovation Act live in Congress with bipartisan co-sponsors to drive a global price on carbon emissions. But our administration isn't supporting it, and so I believe it may be risky for Britain to support everything that our administration is doing, because it's obviously not supporting science is a very risky way to lead us into the future.
Mm. John, what do you say to people who believe, like your president, that climate change is a myth? I mean, he has gone on the record to believe it's something that the Chinese made up.
Yeah, sure. Well, I say when every scientific organization in the world has come to a conclusion about something based on the evidence, it's probably a good idea to go with that conclusion. And there's not one scientific organization in the world that I know of that says anything other than human activities, mainly burning fossil fuels, are the main driver of global warming.
I just wanted to bring...
I'm here.
This is the delay issue that we have here.
It's all right. Go ahead, Nihal.
I just wanted to ask your listeners, Meghna, how they feel about the protests against their president here in the UK. I don't know if you've seen the giant inflatable blimp of Donald Trump as a baby, depicted as a baby. Now, this is the president, and regardless of whether you voted for him or not. I wonder how your listeners feel about British protesters depicting their president in this way.
We'll see if we get a call about that. But Nihal, for your earlier question, by the way, John from Windham, New Hampshire, thank you. You had asked about how Americans feel about the NHS. Granted, things tend to be reduced down to black and white and differing opinions here. But we do have a couple of comments that have come in on Twitter. L. Ross Nola says, many of us in the U.S. wish we had a system of healthcare similar to the NHS. Medicare for all will finally give us access to healthcare, which is a human right and not a privilege for a few. Frank Barton is also reaching out saying, also, while the NHS may not be perfect, when I was injured in London, I was treated much faster than when my family was injured here in the U.S. So two Americans very supportive of the British National Health Service.
Let's bring in Linda in Northampton. I know you've got callers too, Meghna, on your side of the Atlantic. Linda, good afternoon.
Yeah, hi, Niall.
I asked that question of American listeners about the protests against Donald Trump and Jeremy Corbyn's speech against President Trump. What do you think about Jeremy Corbyn's actions?
I haven't got very long, but I'm no great supporter of Donald Trump, but he is invited to this country by our government and the Queen of England. And I just think it's pretty appalling that the leader of the opposition, who would like to think he's the prime minister in waiting, is out on the streets openly protesting and snubbing the president at a state dinner. At the end of the day, leaders have to meet people they wouldn't possibly want to spend time with. But they have to be diplomatic, and it's called statesmanship. And I think it's pretty appalling that the leader of the opposition is actually out there protesting. And with regards to the mayor, Donald Trump has tweeted some sort of childish comments about the mayor. But at the end of the day, the mayor is a representative of the capital city of this country who's invited the president. Mm. He shouldn't have expressed an opinion in the first place saying he didn't think he should have this treatment or that treatment. At the end of the day, the Queen invited him with our government.
Well, Linda, can you hang on here for a second? I'm sorry to cut you off here, Linda, but we have a caller from Portland, Maine, Marfine, who's calling in. Now, Marfine, I know your question is about international security, but you're hearing Linda there saying that she laments the protests against the president in the United Kingdom.
I don't lament the protests. I don't lament the protests. What I'm saying is the leader of the opposition shouldn't be out there.
Jeremy Corbyn. Okay, point taken.
It's not statesmanship, yes.
Okay, no, point taken. And so, Marfine, what do you think about that, responding to what Linda's saying?
I think protest is just a part of any democracy, really. And I've actually been entertained by the British sense of satire that I've seen. The images that have been projected that I've seen going around on the internet. I think someone was trying to say that the Queen was trolling Trump by giving him the first edition of Winston Churchill's book about World War II. And so I think on both sides of the Atlantic, I think it's what we get with being parts of democracies.
Well, so Nihal, what do you think about that?
I think that we'll go back to Linda with that. I'm deflecting as ever. Go on.
Yeah, my initial message to the show was not about the protest, because I've got nothing against the protesters. I'm no big fan of Donald Trump. My issue was the fact that the leader of the opposition, who's hoping to be prime minister of this country, is out there on the streets protesting, when really he should be setting himself up to show that he's a statesman and diplomatic, and rather than,
Linda, we've run out of time. Meghna, it's been great hanging out with you today.
It has been.
And your listeners.
It's been delightful. We should do this again, Nihal.
Of course. So, 100%.
So thank you so much, Nihal Arthanayake, presenter for BBC's Radio 5 Live. Also, apparently you should follow his Twitter feed, because It's an excitable place, Meghna. Thanks again, Nihal. And listeners, by the way, you can get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, in the US or the UK. Thank you so much for calling, and thank you for listening. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive save the planet? Is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits, so you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.